Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
When you're an Adelstrut, when you're a very special 2G Knight, out with the Adelstrut, you're an Adelstrut, one bite, you're obligated to the clan. It's family first and family last. And
weird, macabre, spooky, and a hot ticket on Broadway. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on the show, what the darkness of the Addams Family brings to the Great White Way. And a little bit later, another unusual act, Phoebe Legere. She's run for governor and provoked many with her cabaret shows. She'll play live songs with her quartet. But first, the lovably creepy family created by cartoonist Charles Addams in 1938 is taking Broadway by storm. Since opening in previews a few weeks ago, the Addams Family musical has become the second most popular show on Broadway, just behind Wicked. It features actors Nathan Lane and Bebe Neuwirth in a production that was first done in Chicago last fall, to mixed reviews, but to sales of $11 million in a two-month run. The Broadway version opened officially last night, and it brings the family mansion to a notable location, Central Park, and tells the story of the Addams Family daughter, Wednesday, falling in love with a square boy from Ohio. In a few moments, we'll talk to an author about the lasting appeal of the Addams Family as inspiration for films, TV, and theater. But first, here with a review is our friend Elizabeth Vincentelli, theater critic of the New York Post. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, John.
So, you call the Addams Family a real feat. Quote, it has watered down one of the quirkiest pop culture creations ever, unquote. Why?
Why did it water down to make money?
Or why is that such a feat?
Why did I write that?
What makes that such a...
Well, it's a feat to land squarely in the middle of something that could have been either incredibly great or incredibly horrible. And it's neither. It is not a horrible show, and it's not a great show. It's in that really uncomfortable middle-of-the-road, middle ground, which I find dull and tedious, and that's not what you expect from a musical.
Well, certainly not what you expect from something that originated in the pen of Charles Addams. How did this happen?
Well, I think what happened, I mean, if you're referring to how it could kind of go so wrong, I think what happened is
Well, it sounds like you're saying it didn't go wrong enough. It just went wrong to the point to get it into the middle of the road where you find it bland.
There's a perverse appeal in a horrendous flop. When it goes so wrong that you're just baffled and it becomes almost perversely enjoyable. It's not that at all. I mean, it's really not. The people who put this together are total pros. They know what they're doing. The cast is, I really like the cast a lot, which is why I think I'm not as negative on the show as some of my colleagues. I think that the cast does a great job selling something that's really hard to sell. That is incredibly dull songs, completely characterless. The score has no personality whatsoever. The lyrics are just horrendous, and there's not a single good melody in the whole thing, except for those, you know, snap, snap, but
How much of that can you get? Yeah.
Well, you only get it twice.
Do they milk that a lot?
No, actually, which is good. They only, you know, they do it only a couple of times, and the audience responds like a well-trained seal by clapping along. I guess seals can't clap, snap. But
anyway. Basically, we have the audience is snapping along because everybody knows that song from the old TV series.
And,
boom, 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 boom.
Well, the
but
thing,
they also know the characters, right?
Right,
so we know Morticia, we know Gomez, the
characters,
the mother and the
are
father.
Very familiar and very beloved. And the show actually went back for inspiration to the original cartoons, not the movies, not the TV shows. So people should not expect plots from those, which I think is good. And I think it opened them up. And you should have opened them up more to kind of going in a wild direction. So there's very iconic images, like the image. There's a great number that Uncle Fester does with the moon, which I thought was lovely, really a great number. That's straight, that visual is straight from the cartoon, and it works great. But the problem with the show is that there's two very different sensibilities at work in it. You have that kind of dark, poetic, gothic sensibility from the cartoons, which is very much there, especially in the sets, in the design of the show. And that, I think, comes from the original directors, who are British and come from a kind of arty...
They're the guys who did Shock-Headed Peter,
which was
an amazing little gothic number.
I have to say I was incredibly excited when I saw, when it was announced that they were associated with the show, because I thought, oh my God, they could really, they're taking a risk. Here you have a Broadway show that's taking a risk with these guys who have a left field, really generally interesting perspective. Then that apparently didn't work out at the Tried in Chicago, so they bring in Sensibility Number 2, which is creative consultant Jerry Zaks, who has a much broader sense of humor, which I like, too, on its own. It's just different things, and they don't really
work together. So you have two sensibilities trying to be married together, and it's kind
of
a forced
marriage. Exactly. You have Nathan Lane and Jackie Hoffman really mugging to the rafters, which I really enjoy. I'm a sucker for broad humor. I love that. But next to that, you have this kind of dark, poetic vein, and it just doesn't gel. So it's a weird mix.
We're speaking with Elizabeth Vincentelli, the theater critic of the New York Post. Very mixed review for the new musical, The Addams Family. Elizabeth mentioning she doesn't think there are many killer tunes in this musical. Here's Nathan Lane and Krista Rodriguez and a song called Happy Sad.
You're growing up.
And you're cool with that?
Yes. And no. I'm feeling happy, I'm feeling sad, a little childish, a little dad. I think of all the days you've known, all the ways you've grown, see you on your own, and then I'm feeling happy and sad again. I think I'm rested, but then I'm tired. Today requested, tomorrow fired. And now a boy says he adores she who once was yours. How can I ignore such news? I'm sad and happy. Why
he's sad and hoppy. That's Nathan Lane in the role of Gomez Adams. Hard to place where that accent, what country that accent is from.
I think it just threw up a little.
Elizabeth Vincentelli having a strong reaction to the music of The Addams Family. She's theater critic for the New York Post. So it's mostly Nathan Lane there. He's Gomez Adams,
right,
the father.
Right, he's singing to Wednesday.
And he's singing to his daughter Wednesday, who has fallen in love with a quote-unquote normal boy.
Right.
How does the story unfold?
Well, what we have to clarify is that Wednesday in the show is older than the Wednesday we're used to. She's about 18. She's not the 12, 13-year-old girl that, you know, she doesn't even have the braids. The iconic braids, to me, completely signify the transformation and the kind of character assassination of Wednesday that happens in the show. So she's 18 and she's in love with this guy who's, seriously, he makes Justin Bieber like look like a serial killer. He's unbelievable. So they fall in love, and so she brings him and his family to meet her family, the Adamses. And of course, it's a kind of clash between the freaks and the squares, which you may recognize from La Cage aux Folles. It's the exact same plot. So that's the idea, the confrontation between these two different lifestyles, if I could put it that way.
So Nathan Lane, Bebe Neuwirth, they are Gomez and Morticia, and are they trying to rally the troops around Wednesday? Let's all be normal for these people.
Well, they're kind of trying to pretend and be nice to the others. And then it turns out that the others are not that happy with being that square, and they, you know, everybody learns from each other. Everybody grows. It's one of those shows.
What's wrong with that?
And I think it would completely horrify the Adamses. I mean, which is saying a lot about like what it would do to a human audience, which is the one we happen to have. But
this human audience is going for it big time. It's you know the second most popular show on Broadway already.
Of course, but you know, I mean, I would have bought a ticket too because actually, I don't have any particular sentimental attachment to the Addams Family. cult or creation. I like it, I enjoy it, but I'm not, and that's why I think my review was a little milder than some of the others. I don't have this, I didn't feel betrayed by it because I didn't, but I was looking forward to it because on paper it's a great cast. Nathan Lane and Bebe Neuwirth, and then they have a great series of great second banana type character actors.
What about, I was curious to hear that Basil Twist, the great puppeteer, was part of the group behind
this.
Yes,
indeed. There's a very judicious use of puppets in the show. And I'm also not the biggest fan of puppets, but they're very well used. And I think that's actually also part of what works in the show. The puppets belong in the, what I talked about earlier, which is that poetic gothic sensibility. They work really well. There's a great monster under the bed. The squid is really funny. There's a little cameo by Cousin It. It's all very well done. It's used.
Which one
really
is Cousin
well.
It? Is Cousin It the hand or the big furry thing?
Okay, I'm blanking out
yeah,
now.
Yeah, it's been a long time. It's one or the other.
There's the one, the shaggy. I'm completely blanking out. There's the shaggy hair. There's Cousin It. And,
it's the furry one, I'm told, from the control
room.
Yes,
the furry one.
People who've watched the show more recently than me.
He does business with the curtain. I'm mortified that I'm having like a brain freeze there.
we're talking about the Addams Family, which after a run of previews is now officially open at the Lundfontein Theater on West 46th Street. And as we've mentioned, is already the second most popular show on Broadway, just behind Wicked. And it stars Nathan Lane and Bebe Neuwirth in the roles of Gomez and Morticia Addams.
You think you're pretty charming, don't you?
You used to.
Yesterday. What about tomorrow?
Oh, my darling, don't let's ask for the stars when we have this big love-struck moon.
I've never been inclined to leave the past behind.
Let's stay right where we are and dance.
If like a castanet, we'll click with no regret.
Let's find the evening star and dance.
The
place we're in can never be what was till we begin
to do what dancing does.
Don't leave me high and dry, but can't you see that I say live before we die? And
has anyone ever told you you move like a corpse?
Oh, thank you. I studied with Lurch. If time is ticking by, then maybe we should try to face it as a pair and dance.
Alone
we're lost. We're drifting out to sea.
A little bit of music from the musical The Addams Family, starring Nathan Lane and Bebe Neuwirth. Live Before We Die is the name of that tune, and Elizabeth Vincentelli, the theater critic of the New York Post, here with her review on Soundcheck today. And a mixed review it is. You like the look? The acting is pretty good?
It's very enjoyable. It's over the top and enjoyable and fun. And I just want to say that, yes, Cousin It is the shaggy one who should keep thinking it's like the mini Chewbacca.
Right. So all of our old friends from the 60s TV series are there.
Well, from the cartoon.
Okay.
Really. They go to the TV series in spirit only when they use
the TV theme song.
The Vic Mizzy theme.
Okay. It is, as I've said, the second most popular show currently on Broadway, despite, and you've alluded to this a couple of times already, despite really some pretty awful reviews. Yours is you know, really kind of very moderate compared to some of your colleagues, as you said before.
Right, yeah.
Why does that why that disconnect between the critical review and the popular response?
Well, okay, we have to, a lot of the sales are advanced sales. You know, people buy their tickets ahead way before the reviews come out. So I think it'll be interesting to see how the ticket sales go after the reviews come out. This is, I think you said, 11 or 12 million advance sales. Mm-hmm. So it's doing well based on name recognition.
Right.
Which is really, you could say the same thing about Shrek, about Little Mermaid, about any number of musicals of that type. You know, you couldn't say the same thing of a musical like Next to Normal.
because
so
it has
kind of it goes with the territory, and I think it's perfectly natural. I mean, Nathan Lane could sell anything.
But 6 months from now, do you see this show still on Broadway?
I think it'll probably lurch, no pun intended, towards the end of the year. I'm not sure.
I would intend a pun if I were you.
I don't see a long future for the undead.
The Addams Family is currently playing at the Lundfontein Theater on West 46th Street. Elizabeth Vincentelli, theater critic for the New York Post and occasional contributor to Soundcheck. Elizabeth, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you.
I can face a new tomorrow if I make it past today.
I feel good saying death is just around the corner, swiftly on its way.
Bebe Neuwirth from the musical The Addams Family. What about the real Addams Family? We'll take a look at them in just a moment. And then later, Phoebe Legere. She might be the only musician in New York who has invented musical sneakers and run for governor. Today, the jazz singer and composer joins us with her quartet. This is Soundcheck.
What was my heart crying out to you? A prelude to a kiss. How my love sounds gently grows from my tender sentiment. That was my heart.
People come to see them. They really are a scream. The Addams Family.
Me.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and we've just heard a review of the Addams Family musical. It's currently a very popular show on Broadway, but what about the history of these characters? They've appeared in pop culture in several incarnations in the past. The TV series, of course, you're hearing the theme from that in the background. A couple of movies on the big screen. The characters, though, were created by New Jersey native Charles Addams as a cartoon published in 1938 in the New Yorker magazine. And here to discuss our long fascination with this spooky family is Kevin Mizoraki, author of The Addams Family, An Evolution, and executive director of the T. and Charles Addams Foundation. Kevin, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks, John. It's nice to be here.
So why are we so fascinated more than 70 years later by this set of altogether ooky characters?
I guess because they're not really altogether as ooky as we probably have in the past laid them out to be. They're actually no different than us being the so-called normals. Charles Addams was only trying to say, take a look at what you're not part of yourself and decide who is wrong and who is right and who is normal and who is not normal. He did that in this very small selection of characters that he drew for 50 years through the New Yorker. There were only 150 cartoons of what became the Addams Family ever published, only half of which were published in the New Yorker, mm-hmm. out of the several thousand cartoons he published in his lifetime. So for this culture, cult following that has occurred was only because of a director out in Hollywood who was walking down the street in New York and saw one of Charlie's books in the window at Doubleday and said, we ought to make that a TV show. And that's how it was born.
So were the Addams, I mean, they weren't initially the Addams Family, were they?
They were not. They were individual characters. They had no names. They, as you said, the first cartoon that became an Addams Family personality was Morticia and Gomez, and Lurch at the foot of the stairs of their dilapidated house with Thing at the top of the stairs and a poor vacuum cleaner salesman telling them that they must have this to make their house work light. and easy, and the place is falling apart. So that started the ball rolling. But as the years went by, another character would appear, perhaps in a different capacity completely. And eventually they were joined together, mostly by press, again, because they would refer to them as Adams's family of ghouls, Adams's family of creatures, Adams's house. That's a family word now.
And how did Charles Adams take to having these ghoulish creatures sort of rechristened with his family name?
The family name part was the biggest issue for him. This is a very shy, wonderful artist, and typically an artist, not into what was going on at all. As far as, if you want to do this, that's fine with me. Make a TV show, do what you must. But he was an artist. He was on to the next cartoon. When it came to naming it and having to name the characters for the television show, in the book that we've published, it has those very words that he used that are in the contract to describe them. It's describing nothing more than the cartoons in which they appeared over the years. When they named it the Addams Family, he was fairly crushed because he was a shy man and acted behind the scenes. He did not choose to be an actor. He chose to be a cartoonist. Mm-hmm. And it was all right, but he was not happy.
We're speaking with Kevin Mizoraki. He is the head of the T. and Charles Adams Foundation and author of The Addams Family and Evolution, I like the title. I guess this is a two-part question. What do you think he would have thought about the Addams Family musical? And, of course, that's a theoretical question. You're here. What do you think of seeing these characters on Broadway?
I enjoy this. I've enjoyed the process completely. Now that the musical is opened, it's okay to speak of. Otherwise, it was not my place to do this. Mm-hmm. After all, it was a producer.
Well, but didn't they have to get your permission?
Absolutely. We went looking for each other. I spent a year looking for producers and found Stuart Oaken and couldn't have been happier. Mm-hmm. This was not going to be a typical show, and it was not. And I was very happy to do something with these characters that had not been done before. Charles Adams happened to have loved the musical theater, loved music, wasn't crazy about Hollywood, but that doesn't mean he didn't approve. He just wasn't going out there. I think he would have loved this approach to the Addams Family, that whatever we did with his characters was going to be beyond what he did. After all, it was a single drawing. Mm-hmm. A cartoonist has to convey what on stage they are trying to do for 2.5 hours or in a film. He had to do in one shot.
So you think he would have liked the idea of the producers picking up the ball and running with it for
Absolutely.
Another
Absolutely. Hey, we're in the 21st century. Charlie was certainly into the future himself, although he loved the past and history. I don't think this would have concerned him one way or the other. I think the portrayal of the characters perhaps would have been agreeable to him because he found them sweet. Hmm. That was something that even Vic Mizzi writing the original music said, they're sweet, and they are sweet. If you want to consider them gothic and dark, go right ahead.
Well, I think that was part of the fun of the TV
Absolutely.
Series.
Absolutely. No one had done that even in The New Yorker. Especially The New Yorker was to exemplify the darker side. We may all think that. And that's not just in these drawings. Charlie did that all the way through.
Going to the comments page, wnyc.org/soundcheck, Jack from Brooklyn writes, "The Addams Family was basically about outsiders, maybe even immigrants with weird ways and odd quirks living in America. This musical sounds like all signs of an immigrant experience are washed away." Do you agree that it was kind of an outsider creation by Charles Adams? And if so, you know, doesn't that get sanitized in the experience of Hollywood and Broadway and TV?
I suppose it does, to make it understandable for all of us out here who are no longer in touch with our immigrant roots. But to tell you the truth, Charles Adams didn't base this on anything to do with any immigrants. If he may have had a husband named Gomez, it happened to be that he had to name it for the TV show. He was not doing the cartoons thinking of a Latin husband whatsoever. When it came to naming them, he looked at the color of how he always drew him as dark, swarthy, mustached, and had a childhood family friend whose name was Gomez and just picked it out of the air.
So it wasn't until the TV show in the 60s that these characters got names.
Absolutely. Huh. I mean, he picked Morticia out of the phone book because he rifled through the pages and came to Morticians and thought, well, that's an interesting section.
It's a brilliant name. But he created these characters in 1938, some of them. That's the end of the Great Depression, you know? And now here we are at what we hope is the end of the Great Recession. Is there a kind of relevance? I mean, is that part of what people respond to? Is this kind of escapism of the Addams Family?
I think that's exactly what it is. I think that's why people have always enjoyed and embraced the cartoons that he drew, because it did allow escape. The New Yorker was known for incredible writing and very witty cartoons. That took you out of yourself. That doesn't mean the writing did. The cartoons did. I think what we've turned that into watching TV. We started out on soap operas, and we moved through reality TV that supposedly takes you out of yourself instead of get up and go outside, and there's the reality too. But Charlie drew the cartoons of these characters really to show us what we were doing and what someone else may have been doing. This became a family who ended up raising their children, trying to get the best for them. They may have gone about it a little different way than we did, but he never really showed you that. He just suggested it.
Mm-hmm.
No pain, no blood, no nothing.
Well, now, Charles Addams passed away in the 80s, right?
Yes, 1988.
Okay, so he had gotten to the point where he had okayed a TV series and... One of two movies?
He had just signed that movie contract for the first film, but he never lived to see that.
Okay. Now we see those characters on Broadway in a very popular Broadway show, already number two, as I mentioned earlier, on Broadway just behind Wicked. And now we live in a world where the media options have exploded to the point of, you know, almost unlimited things you could be watching or hearing or doing,
yes.
Social networking, the internet, etc. Will those characters somehow find their way through this new thicket of media?
I think so. After all, Pomegranate was brave enough to publish this book for us, and they're on the West Coast. This book was to establish the source material. The galleys of this book were given to the producers of the musical as the source material for this show. No preconceived notions of what existed before. There were two movies. There was a TV series. There was a second TV series that they rewrote and filmed in Canada of the new Addams Family. There was even Daryl Hannah playing Morticia in a direct-to-video. There were two Hanna-Barbera cartoon series done in someone else's interpretation of his cartoons. We're in a media world right now that perhaps reading items on paper is not going to exist quite as heavily. We wanted the chance to republish Charlie's work and establish that for two generations who don't have a clue that there was da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da anywhere.
The Addams Family musical is on Broadway, and the book is called The Addams Family, An Evolution.
Yes.
Kevin Mizoraki is the executive director of the T. and Charles Addams Foundation and author of said book. And Kevin, thank you for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you, John. It was great to come.
They really are the scream, the Addams Family.
Neat. Sweet. The T.
So get a witch's shawl on.
Still to come, we'll hear from a jazz singer and composer with one of the most unusual resumes in New York. Phoebe Legere joins us to play songs from her new album, a collection of originals and French chansons, next on Soundcheck. Malcolm McLaren died yesterday at the age of 64. The man who put punk on the map was one of those people you either loved or hated. The Sex Pistols? Come on, that was the punk version of the Monkees, put together by McLaren for their look and their attitude, not for any musical ability. And yet, I listen to that first record and I still marvel at what he accomplished.
WNYC support comes from International Film Circuit, presenting the new film, Who Do You Love? Alessandro Nivola stars as record mogul Leonard Chess, who launched rock and roll with his discovery of legendary musicians Muddy Waters and Bo Diddley. Opens at Village East Cinema in Clearview, 1st and 62nd, April 9th. The Bard College Conservatory Orchestra, making its New York City debut at Alice Tully Hall with soprano Dawn Upshaw and pianist Melvin Chen, tomorrow at 8 p.m., 212-671-4050. Elevator Repair Service Theater, presenting One Night with Frances McDormand, Lily Taylor, Frankie Faison, and Fred Armisen, reading classic American fiction live, curated by Paul Muldoon, May 3rd at the New York Society for Ethical Culture, info at elevator.org.
Today at 3 on Science Friday, you've heard the song about the wind sweeping down the plains in Oklahoma? Well, can all that wind be turned into energy? Join Ira Flatow for a look at wind power in Oklahoma. That's Science Friday, today at 3 at 93.9 FM. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. When people say, this artist has done it all, they're usually exaggerating. But if you say, Phoebe Legere has done it all, well, I might actually believe you. Her first film appearance was singing this song in the movie Mondo, New York. For years, she was a jazz pianist and singer by day, well, by evening anyway, and a downtown performance artist by night. She wrote a work for Chamber Symphony that was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. She invented musical sneakers for disabled kids, wrote a solo show about veganism, and an epic poem about evolution theory. Oh, and she ran for governor of New York in 2006. But now, Phoebe Legere is going back to basics. With a mix of original songs and French chansons, and she is here with her quartet. They're going to start us off with her original song called Sometimes It Snows in Las Vegas. Here is the Phoebe Legere Quartet.
I came here last night on a 5-hour flight. My head was on fire, I'd been up all night. My wallet was empty, I looked at the sky. It was starting to snow, and I started to cry. Sometimes it snows in Las Vegas. Diamonds shine on the desert sand. It snows in Nevada. You feel like you're falling in love. Let it snow, let it snow. Let your poor heart go. Sometimes cool things fall from above. You dance. It feels too sweet to be true. Let it snow, let it snow, and let your poor heart go. Sometimes cool things happen to you. When you're hot, and you've got to act quick. In Vegas, that snow really can't stick. It lasts as long as a 3-minute song. So let's raise a glass and all sing along. La 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 Las Vegas. La 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 la. Sometimes cool things fall from above.
the Phoebe Legere Quartet live in our studio. Sometimes it snows in Las Vegas. Phoebe wrote the song and played our piano and, of course, sang. Sinbad Sinatra providing backup vocals and guitar. Victor Jones playing the drums. John Burr the bass. Phoebe, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi.
So this is a song from your new CD called The Ooh La La Cocktail,
yes.
Which you describe as a mix of jazz and French music. And is this, for someone who has done so many things, this really is a back-to-basics kind of project. What was the idea here?
I wanted to make sure that in my catalog, I had a record that really reflected what I've been doing all my life to make a living. I have financed all of my artistic projects from my computer, my wearable computer invention, the musical sneakers, to my musical about the first African-American woman president. All of the things that I've done, I've financed by being a jazz pianist and singer. And I sang the great standards. I sang any song anybody wanted to hear, and of course my own songs. So I wanted to make sure I had a CD that people could get that had that music on it.
All right, so it's not that you're calming down or settling down to any one thing, but this is basically like a calling card in a sense?
Actually, for the past 10 years, I have been doing primarily classical, avant-garde, and experimental music. I played with the Cleveland Chamber Symphony.
Right. That was the piece that got the Pulitzer nomination.
Yes, it did. And I wrote epic poems. I was playing with a wonderful composers collective called the Tone Road Ramblers. I did all kinds of experimental and adventurous music for 10 years while the music industry was in a state of great upheaval.
Yeah, we noticed.
I took the opportunity to just really follow my muse and do all kinds of things that were certainly not commercial. So at the end of 10 years, I actually went back to Juilliard. I went to graduate school in film scoring. I wrote and conducted works for symphony orchestra. At the end of all of this rather academic, intellectual activity that also included a Native American record mm-hmm. called Children of the Dawn, at the end of all of this pretty serious activity, and John, it's been a pretty serious decade, you know? And at the end of it, I suddenly wanted to bring some light to the world with a record that was mostly about love. Mm-hmm. Love is the theme of this CD.
So it's the Ooh La La Cocktail.
Yes, it is.
I mean, Ooh La La, you know, you've written and sung a lot about gender roles, you know, women, the battle of the sexes, mm-hmm. the way women are perceived in our society.
Yes.
Are you backing off of that now, or are you still singing about that?
Well, I think that my song Sex is Love, which opens up the CD, is a song that really does deal with the differences between men and women. But the title, Ooh La La, is simply that a lot of this music on the CD is in French.
Hmm.
I wanted to come up with a French word that everybody felt very comfortable saying. I know that people get a little bit skittish about pronouncing anybody's name wrong. My name is Légère. And some people are not used to that soft G, Légère. So I already knew that people can be a little shy about saying French words, so I wanted to have a French word that everybody could have fun saying. Everybody knows how to say ooh la la, and I wanted to have something that really got the mouth open at the end of it, and la really gets you in position for all kinds of
yes.
good stuff. The cocktail is the Ooh La La Cocktail is spelled COQTAIL, and that's a kind of tongue-in-cheek nod to the fact that the French use the word cocktail all the time, but the proper way to spell it, you know, they it's okay if you use an English word every once in a while, but you have to give it a French spelling, so that's why it's COQTAIL, Ooh La La Cocktail.
We are speaking to Phoebe Legere, and here is actually a little bit of that record. We'll give people a chance to hear you singing en français.
C'est une chanson d'automne dans la maison qui frissonne. Et je pense aux jours lointains que resta-t-il de nos amours? Que reste-t-il ces beaux jours, une photo, vieille photo de ma jeunesse. Que reste-t-il des billets doux, des mois d'avril?
Que reste-t-il de nos amours? What is left of our love? Phoebe Legere singing this French song from the 1940s on her new CD, which is coming out next week. It's called the Ooh La La Cocktail. And the Phoebe Legere Quartet performing for us here this afternoon and playing Tuesday night at Iridium. That's April 13th. There will be two shows at 8 and 10 p.m., but since the quartet is here, let's listen to another song. This one is basically a duet between Phoebe Legere and Sinbad Sinatra. It's called I Love Myself, live on Soundcheck.
I look at you and say I love me.
I look at you and say I'm fine.
And I like the way I walk.
I like the way I talk.
And I love myself when I'm with you. I hold your hand and I'm perfection.
I kiss your lips and I'm so blind.
And I'm feeling like a king.
Who wouldn't change a thing?
And I love myself when I'm with you. When I'm alone in the night, I think of you and hold myself real tight. Holding me,
loving me,
knowing how lovely life can be.
You really make me feel gigantic.
You sure can make me feel it all.
I'm loving what it's like
hanging round your sight. And I
love myself when I'm with you.
That is the Phoebe Legere Quartet, Phoebe Legere and Sinbad Sinatra singing to each other, Phoebe from the piano and Sinbad playing the guitar, Victor Jones the drums, John Burr playing the bass, and the Phoebe Legere Quartet performing for us live here in our Soundcheck studio with some songs from Phoebe's forthcoming CD, the Ooh La La Cocktail. Another song that maybe gives us a slightly naughtier side of the sounds of love is this tune, Play Me Like a Piano. Let's hear another live performance here in our soundcheck studio from the Phoebe Legere Quartet.
I was restless, I was looking for something. I wasn't really sure of the time. I was in the mood for some live entertainment. I looked up and saw your sign. You are a master manipulator, running your hands on my keys. You know what I like, what notes to strike. You get a little rise out of me. You playing me like a piano, caressing my arpeggios. Something in your playing has got me saying, you play me like a piano. You play me like a piano. Whoa, baby, you play me like a piano.
You tickle, tickle, tickle my ivories
and softly blow on my mind. You throw me a curve till I get up the nerve to say, baby, please be mine. It's your cadence that rocks my feeling, the math and the heart that don't lie. The message in the code makes me open my robe and say I love you till the day that I die. Behind the behind, it's the glow on Morrison's grave. You got me signing up for your contest to become your favorite slave. You're playing me, playing me, playing me. I'm putty in your hands, baby, buddy. Mo ain't my friend. You're playing me like a piano, a touch on me, grabbing my soul. Don't let me go. Just play me like a piano. You play me like a piano, baby.
You play me like a piano.
Playing Me Like a Piano is Phoebe Legere's song from the album The Ooh La La Cocktail, live performance here in our studio from the Phoebe Legere Quartet. Again, they're playing at Iridium next Tuesday, two shows at 8 and 10 o'clock on April 13th, but performing for us here today. And Phoebe, you've studied classical music, written classical music, you've recorded rock songs, songs that have more of a reggae feel, lots of experimental stuff. Do you still consider yourself basically a jazz musician?
Yes, I do. Jazz is the backbone of American music, and of course, jazz is rooted foundationally in the blues. And everything in America that's good musically really comes from the soul of the blues.
What about, you've also recorded some Native American chants. Now, that's obviously way before the blues, although once we came, those people got the blues big time,
oh,
didn't they?
Oh, yes, yes.
Do you have Native American family?
I do. I'm Abenaki, Penobscot, and on my father's side, a little Mi'kmaq. I'm part French-Canadian, part Native American, and part Mayflower descendant.
Really?
So we've been here a long time and always on the northeast coast, so I feel very, very close to this place.
And you have an Indian name, a Native American name, right?
Phoebe Songbundle, and I do a lot of teaching in the schools as a Native American educator, teaching through songs and stories about environmental respect.
So what is it that you hope kids come away from a session with Phoebe Songbundle?
Oh,
with.
Well, you know, there are so many, there are so many stereotypes. So I try to emphasize that even though we may not live in wigwams anymore, even though we may get our food in the grocery store, I try to show how all of our food, all of our medicine is there in the woods still. It's all of our medicine is still in our bodies. We heal with music. We heal with dance. That is our religion. All of the animals are like saints to us. Spirit animals are a way of healing ourselves. We can access the power of animals, the power of the ocean, the power of the sky, simply by remembering that we come from the earth. We can heal any disease that we have.
And you say this to urban inner city kids, and
yes,
they
I
look
do.
At you and they go,
no,
what?
I show them where they can find nature growing out of the cracks of the walls. I show them how at the edges between the asphalt and the street, there will always be a place where there is nature.
Phoebe Legere with us here with her quartet and playing at Iridium on Tuesday night, the forthcoming CD called the Ooh La La Cocktail. Phoebe, thank you so much for bringing the band in and playing for us today.
We're so honored. I love your show.
Phoebe Legere, my guest on Soundcheck. That'll do it for today's show. Tomorrow, next time on our program, the Vermont-born folk singer Sam Amidon harkens back to ancient Scottish murder ballads and looks ahead to modern orchestral and electronica composers. He'll join us to play live. That's next time on Soundcheck. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our engineer today was George Wellington. The program produced by Brian Wise and Joel Meyer. Our executive producer is Gisele Regatow, and we had help today from Jasmine Little and Martin Silko. I'm John Schaefer. Be with us again next time for another Soundcheck. Coming up next on Science Friday, join Ira Flatow for a look at wind power in Oklahoma and the surrounding region and whether the Plain States will be turning out electricity for the rest of the country. Science Friday, coming up next.